this one. Looks good.
Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahavityan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhi Tamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Chaitanyam Sarvagam Sarvam Sarvaguhashayam Yat Sarva Vishayatitam Tasmai Sarva Vide Namaha. Oh my, good. Very good. Good to see you all. Welcome to you, and also welcome to our many students regularly attending these classes online. We continue our study of the 17th chapter of Upadesha Sahasri. Shankara continues his brilliant presentation, and we've just entered into a very, very profound discussion about the nature of ignorance. And it turns out that understanding something about the nature of ignorance is really crucial. For example, every medical doctor spends a lot of time studying pathology. If you don't understand the nature of the illness, you're not going to be able to solve it. On the other hand, a doctor who only studies pathologists, a doctor that only studies pathology, called a pathologist, would you go for that person for medical treatment? Think about it for a moment. their focus is on what's wrong. They don't really, their focus is not on how to cure you of whatever ails you. So it would be kind of silly to seek out a pathologist for cure. And I think that's a good metaphor for whenever we enter into the study of this particular topic, ajnana, and we're going to relate it to, ajnana means ignorance, we're going to relate it to maya in just a moment. And it's important, very important, just as it's important for every general practitioner doctor to understand pathology reasonably well. On the other hand, to be excessively focused or exclusively focused on the nature of ignorance is kind of beside the point, right? Because it's the problem. Shouldn't we be focused more on the solution? And you may think that you know, why is Swamiji making this point? Well, if you start reading more advanced texts, especially the Sanskrit texts, you'll find that some people, some great scholars, really seize on this topic of avidya and use it to, they interpret avidya differently. And actually, Let me be very frank. There was a schism amongst modern followers of Shankaracharya. The schism took place maybe 20 years ago. And the schism was based on the teachings of a certain Swami who lived in Karnataka, who was a brilliant scholar. But he interpreted in ignorance in a way that was not consistent with mainstream followers of Shankaracharya, and he insisted that his definition of ignorance is right, the other definition of ignorance is wrong. And the reason I'm bringing this to your attention is his excessive, what I believe was his excessive focus on the nature of ignorance had an unfortunate outcome, which was a schism amongst, mostly, you know, you've never heard of it, it's a schism that mostly affected scholars, didn't affect most students of Advaita Vedanta. Anyway, I just share that with you as a warning And the warning is, let us understand the nature of ignorance, but let us not forget that what's really crucial is not understanding ignorance. It's understanding Atma Swarupa, understanding your true nature is what is crucial. Okay, with that in mind, I'd like to go to the board and pick up a thread from last week and continue it a little bit further. And I have to push this button and this button. Okay, please don't sit in front of the camera.
Oh.
Yeah. So we have many online students. You can sit over here. Just okay. All right. So last week we had seen a comparison, and I'll use all Roman letters so no one has a problem reading this. So we had talked about the relationship between Ajnana and Maya. So Ajnana, ignorance, and Maya, which has so many wrong definitions. Our definition here is a creative capacity associated with Brahman that results in the creation of the world. That's a very technical definition, but at least it's right. There are so many definitions that are so illusion and all of this stuff. No scholar would ever translate Maya in that way. So anyway, we've discussed that at great length in our prior class. By the way, if you're coming for the first time, you can find the previous class online, and that will get you caught up to where we are today. So our discussion last week was looking at these two as being analogous or parallel. And the specific point we said that Ajnana applies to the individual, what we call the Vyashti, the individual perspective. Some people will translate as microcosmic perspective, as opposed to Samashti, which is the big picture, the collective, the whole, what some people would call the macrocosmic perspective. And this is very helpful because then it helps us understand both of these by seeing how they're related, and that's what we're going to see a little further today. So Ajnana is at the individual perspective, is your incapacity to recognize your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. That's caused by it's already. Look at this. You already are. Your true nature, you've heard, your true nature is already divine. But that inner divinity is unrecognized. My guru liked the word self-non-recognition. That self-non-recognition means you know you are a conscious being, but you don't know the nature of that consciousness. You think your consciousness, for example, is affected constantly by everything that happens in your mind. Sadness enters your mind, and you know, I've given this example many times, but especially for our newcomers. When sadness enters your mind and you're looking down like that, someone taps you on the shoulder, are you okay? Do you say, I'm okay, but sadness has entered my mind? But that's exactly the truth. Because you, in essence, are Satchidananda Atma, that so-called inner divinity, which we would in Vedanta probably translate as unchanging observer. You are the unchanging, unaffected observer who observes the entrance and presence of sadness in your mind. But you don't say that. You don't say, I'm okay, but sadness has entered my mind. What do you say? I am sad. That's a second step. To say I am sad is a second step, because not only have you failed to recognize your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, but additionally you have identified yourself with the condition of your mind. Two steps. One is self non-recognition, and the second step is false identification. Self non-recognition and false identification. These have technical words in Sanskrit, and this is the new material we'll introduce today. And what we say is, ignorance has two kinds of, the presence of ignorance has two kinds of consequences, or two kinds of effects, we can say. Oftentimes they say two types of shakti, but to me that, then we start getting into trouble when we start getting overly focused on the details of the nature of ignorance. So I'm not going to call it a jnana shakti. I think that term is commonly used in scholarly literature, but leads us down a tricky path. So we'll just say that it's two kinds of effect of ignorance. Let me write them horizontally. One is avarana. Avarana literally means covering, which I should spell correctly, and this explains the self non-recognition. So you don't recognize your true nature. Why? Ignorance. How does ignorance cause self non-recognition? It has an effect of covering. And by the way, that covering, I make a technical distinction here. This technical distinction is important, which is why I'm bringing it to your attention right now. Is it a complete covering or a partial covering? Those of you who have been attending this class regularly, you know the answer to that question. If it were completely covering your true nature as consciousness, you wouldn't know you're conscious. I don't think there's anyone who says, I'm unconscious. Who can say that? Consciousness is known to you in a general way, but it's not known to you in detail. Which is why, if it's called a covering, that covering is often called like a veil. And this is a reference to women, especially in Rajasthan, other parts of North India, who cover their, not just their heads, but their faces, with a cloth that is semi-transparent. If it were opaque, they'd fall right over. So the idea of the semi-transparent material is covering their faces is their faces are hidden to the extent that you can't recognize facial details. You can see a face, but you can't see the details of the face. So in this way, the so-called veil of ignorance, avarana, is like a partial covering of consciousness. You know that you are a conscious being, but you don't know that consciousness, the consciousness which is your essential nature, existed before you're born, will continue to exist without change when your body dies, without change, and is unchanging even now, which means when sadness enters your mind, nothing happens to consciousness. When your body is in pain, nothing happens to consciousness. Consciousness is utterly unaffected, utterly unchanged, but you don't know that. In fact, if you did know that, you wouldn't be sitting in class today because you'd be enlightened, no problem. So, this avarana then is a covering. Avarana literally means covering, but please note, it is a partial covering. The second of the two factors is, the technical terms, which I'll explain, is vikshepa. Vikshepa means projection. And that is the cause for what we said was the... Was that showing up on top? Yes, good. Is the false identification. Notice the two steps. Because... Now, please help her sit. Yeah, there's a camera behind you. Yeah, no, you can sit there. Please sit there, but don't move the chair. That's it. Yeah. Okay, no problem. Actually, I don't know yet. We'll see. So, we mentioned these two steps before. First, when sadness enters your mind, you experience sadness. Normal. Then we get in trouble. Why? You fail to recognize that your consciousness, the consciousness that makes you aware of sadness in your mind, that consciousness is utterly unaffected by the presence of sadness in your mind. By the way, there are a number of new people in the class. This is not really an introductory class, so we're going to presume that you've had some background to the teachings of Advaita Vedanta. If you haven't, you might consider coming on Saturdays. The class on Saturdays is much more accessible, but this class will assume that you've understood some main principles of Advaita Vedanta. So, two steps. First, failure to recognize the truth that the sadness doesn't affect you at all. Your nature as Satchidananda Atma, the so-called inner divinity, remains utterly unchanged. Does something which is divine get sad? Does that make any sense at all? The fact that we call it divine means it should be unaffected by the presence of sadness. Step one. Step two is failing to identify, failing to recognize your true nature. You falsely identify yourself with the nature of your mind. And that false identification is a second step, a second factor associated with ignorance, a second consequence, we can say, of ignorance. It's called vikshepa in Sanskrit, and in English, projection is an adequate. We project, we imagine, we superimpose. Basically, we make an error. We make an erroneous assumption. And the erroneous assumption is that I am truly affected by the sadness. I am the mind. Sadness affects the mind. Notice, sadness doesn't affect consciousness. Of course, sadness affects the mind. But you have a mind. You are not the mind, right? You have a car. You are not the car. You have a body. You are not. But anything you have is not you. Please notice, you don't have consciousness because something you have is a possession, and a possession is something you can give up. You can sell your car. What happens to you when you sell your car? You're still there. You can give up your body from a Vedantic standpoint. Fine, we all will at the end of our lives. Doesn't mean the end of your existence as a conscious being. You can give up your mind. And we say people lose their minds, figuratively speaking. But in deep sleep, dreamless sleep, you give up your mind. Do you cease to exist? You still exist without a mind. That shows how you possess a body, by the way, in dream. You give up this body, and you take on a dream body in a dream. In deep sleep, you give up your mind also, but you continue to exist as a conscious being. If you give up consciousness, if you are no longer a conscious being, then what are you? Zero. Nothing left. Consciousness, we say, is your essential nature. In Sanskrit, swarupa. Okay, so this so far is all from the individual standpoint, vyashti. Now, just briefly, this is not our main topic today, except we're going to be using this word a lot. So we should finish this discussion. From the samashti viewpoint, maya also has both of these functions. And that is, due to maya, Brahman, by the way, the Upanishad, Chandogya Upanishad, says, sarvam kalvidam brahma, all of this is Brahman. Where? Do you see Brahman? Obvious. The rishis could see it. The rishis were enlightened. But due to this avarana, you don't see Brahman. And then, second step, what do you see? World. Projection. Non-recognition, in this case not self-non-recognition, we're going now to the vyashti, samashti, the macrocosmic perspective. So from that macrocosmic perspective, the first step is the non-recognition of Brahman, the reality because of which everything exists. And the second step is the false identification, and that is, this is a world made of physical and non-physical stuff. This turns out to be a much bigger topic, but it's not our topic in the verse. So, in the coming verses, so we'll leave it here. Okay, now we can... That's a rather lengthy introduction, but now we can understand these verses quite well. Okay, I have to push this button and this button. All right. So we'll pick up where we left off. Maya hastinam aruhya, maya hastinam aruhya, maya vyeko yata vrajet, maya vyeko yata vrajet. I'm just looking at the Sanskrit, make sure that's not a typo. Agachans, you're correct. Okay, it's a present participle. Can I check the grammar as I'm going through this? Agachanstadvarevatma. Agachanstadvarevatma. Pranaswapnarigochalaha. Pranaswapnarigochalaha. So explaining ignorance, and a perspective is vyashti. So even though we're using this word maya, you see, our perspective is vyashti, not samashti. So yata, in the second line, yata, just as, I need to give an introduction even to this. So you've all watched magic shows, magic acts, and using modern technology, it's just mind-boggling what these professional magicians can do. They use a lot of technology, they use state-of-the-art effects, and they make you see what is absolutely impossible. Now, in ancient times, they didn't have all that technology, but they did have magicians. And somehow, don't ask me how, but according to stories we have today, these magicians were able to do some amazing things. There's a story that comes in Sanskrit commentaries about a magician who takes a rope, throws it in the air, and it hangs there, and he climbs up the rope and disappears. If you ask me how, I have no idea, but we know, we have these stories. So this is a different kind of story. This is a story of a magician standing in front of an audience who conjures an elephant. So suddenly there's an elephant standing in their midst. He's standing next to the elephant, and he says, "A husty deco, look. Look at this Maya hasti, this, by the way, that word hasti, that's correct, hati. Yeah, hasti is Sanskrit, hati. It's interesting, the etymology of this, hasta, you know. So hasti or hati is what is something that has one hand. What is that one hand? That's how that word comes about. So anyway, this magician conjures the elephant in front of the audience. The audience is amazed, right? But then, just like when the magician throws a rope and it just hangs there, they're amazed. But skillful magicians know that just amazing them isn't enough. So in the earlier example, the magician climbs up the rope and disappears. In this example, the magician gets on the elephant and walks off. Of course, has to come back. The magician has to come down the rope. The fellow on the magician on the elephant has to come back. So with that in mind. So it says here, yata, just as, mayavi. And we saw this compound before. It's not maya, but mayavi, common word for magician, but I'm going to retranslate it in just a moment. Mayavi, just like a magician, ekaha, one magician, vrajet, goes. Set that aside. Just as one magician, first line, maya hastinam ahruhya. Ahruh is to get up, to go on. So he climbs on the elephant. And the object is maya hastinam. He climbs on the hasti, which is mayika, the magical elephant, the magician that was conjured by some kind of magic. So he climbs up aruhya, having climbed up maya hastinam on the back of the elephant. What does he do? Vrajet. He goes on. But then, agachan, and he comes back. He goes, and he comes back. Tadvat, in the same way, and here comes a wonderful metaphor, in the same way, tadvat eva, indeed, atma, ekaha atma, that word eka can go down also, ekaha atma, one atma, which is a chalaha, in the last line, unmoving, unchanging, that one unchanging atma, prana swapnadi gaha, goes where? Prana, we saw before, is an obscure way of talking about the state of deep sleep, dreamless sleep. We talked about that in a prior class. Swapna, you know, as dream state. Adi, etc., waking state. So these three states that we experience every day, waking state, dream state, deep sleep state, it seems magically that achala, unchanging consciousness. Atma means your true self, your essence has consciousness, that unchanging consciousness, Atma, so-called inner divinity, which is achalaha, unmoving, unchanging, seems to undergo these three states of experience, waking, dream, and sleep. When you wake up in the morning and someone asks you, how did you sleep? I didn't sleep. This is, I'll be just facetious. The enlightened person answers, I didn't sleep. My mind slept. Which is correct. Consciousness doesn't go to sleep. Consciousness doesn't wake up. Consciousness doesn't undergo three states of experience. Consciousness observes the passage of these three states of experience. Of course, we will actually come to our ignorance in just a moment. But here, look at the metaphor. The magician creates an elephant, gets on the elephant, and goes off. Atma gets into the waking state and literally drives around. You all drive a car. So, does I'm being silly now. Does Atma have a driving license? Does Atma drive? But then you will sit here and say, yeah, I drove here for class. If I is Atma, Atma doesn't drive. But here's that second step, that false identification, because you fail to recognize, because of self non-recognition, you fail to recognize yourself as unchanging consciousness, and therefore the second step, you identify yourself with the body and mind. So you sit down and say, yes, I drove here. Waking state. And then in dream state. In my dream, I ran from a lion. So now you're identified with the dream body. Right now you're identified with this body and mind. When you're dreaming, you're identified with a different body and mind. And then in deep sleep, you say, last night I had a sound sleep. I didn't dream at all. Which I? Consciousness never slept. So you can see very clearly these two steps. First, self non-recognition due to avarana, the partial covering of the reality of who you are as unchanging consciousness. And the second step, vikshepa, projection, the wrong conclusion that arises, that false identification. Okay, this is explained more in the next verse. Excuse me just a moment. Nahasti nadhararudho, nadhasti nadhararudho, maya vyanyo yathastitaha, maya vyanyo yathastitaha, na pranadi tadrashta, na pranadi tadrashta, yatatagnya. Tathagnyonya sadadrishihi. Tathagnyonya sadadrishihi. What is the reality with regard to the story? Nahasti. There never was an elephant. No. Tad arudaha. Tad is a pronoun, means the elephant. Nor was there arudha climbing onto tat, onto that elephant. How can you climb onto an elephant that doesn't exist? You experienced it. And this is a favorite topic we've talked about in this class again and again. Just because you experience it doesn't mean it's real. Experience fools us all the time. The example many of you have heard here several times before is this: you have yet to see the sun go down. Because the sun doesn't go down, your turns. The sun is just sitting there. The earth turns. Yet, how many times have you experienced the sunset? Just because you experience it doesn't mean it's real. Just because they experienced this elephant And the magician climbing up and driving and going off doesn't mean it's real. That's the point here. The elephant is not real. Climbing onto the elephant is not real. There is no elephant and no riding. Maya vi anyaha. Other than, what is there? There's no elephant. There's no riding, but there is a magician. If there were no magician, there'd be no elephant or riding. So anyaha, other than mayavi, other than the magician, there is nothing. So there is no husk, there's no elephant, there's no riding. All that is present is one mayavi, one magician, who is stitaha, just standing there. Just standing there, there is no magician. Do we want to do that here? Yeah. Okay, let me come back to that. Now we have to, there's a little deeper level we have to see here. We'll do it after we're done with the verse. So, yatha, just as. There's no elephant, there's no riding, there's only a magician. In the same way, na pranadi, there are no states of waking, dream, and sleep. Projected. There is nata drashta, nor is there an observer of waking, dream, and sleep. I'm going to come back to that. What is there, tata, just as in the case of the elephant, jnaha anyaha, other than consciousness, there is nothing there. Sada drishihi, the one who is sada, always, the drishi, always conscious, except for unchanging consciousness, there is nothing there. Now, nothing there, let's see, we can spend 2 weeks talking about that, so let me find an approach here put it like this. You experience the elephant, but it's not absolutely real. You experience waking state, dream state, and sleep state. According to Advaita Vedanta, this is not said as something you have to believe. This is said as something you have to understand with the help of all these teachings. Just as the elephant is not absolutely real, in the same way, your experiences of waking, dream, and sleep are not absolutely real. And this is a two-week topic, but the essence of that two-week discussion is this. That which is real doesn't come and go. Anything that comes and goes is transient, ephemeral. How real is that? Metaphor given in scriptures and commentaries like bubbles. In fact, the Sanskrit bud-buddha. I like the sound of that. Just like bud-buddha, just like a bubble. You can almost hear it go pop. But all these bubbles go popping. How real is something that can just go pop and cease to exist? How real is that? Well, how real is your experience in the waking, in the dream state? You wake up, pop, it's gone. When you wake up, you suddenly realize that whole dream experience was not real. It felt absolutely real during the dream. Did it not? Then you wake up. Watch this. It's possible to wake up out of this waking state. When you wake up out of the dream, you know that the dream experience was not real. When you wake up out of this sleep, sleep of ignorance, metaphor, when you wake up out of the sleep of ignorance, pop, you realize that this experience is not absolutely real. Anyway, that's the short version. Full explanation is two weeks. So, this is the effect of ignorance, which has that capacity to obscure and capacity to project. Now, there's the technical thing I want to get into here a little bit. And it has to do with that word mayavi. Let me introduce the reason for this little technical issue. The magician deliberately creates the elephant and gets on, and so all of this is deliberately conjured by the magician. On the other hand, the waking dream and deep sleep states are not in any sense deliberately created by consciousness. In many, many previous classes, in fact, whole chapters, this is chapter 17, so we've gone through whole chapters of this text that have said again and again that Atma, being unchanging, can't do anything. That which doesn't change, doesn't have motion, doesn't have volition, will, is just isness. Consciousness is your fundamental nature as pure, unchanging consciousness. Therefore, consciousness, as we've said, doesn't do anything. Now, remember my guru's joke? He said it again and again, consciousness doesn't do anything. He said, it's good for nothing. Just to emphasize the fact that consciousness has no empirical function, has no worldly function. Your body and mind are engaged in actions. Consciousness is not engaged in action. So then the question becomes, there's a problem with the metaphor, and that's what I'm bringing to your attention. You've heard me say before, every metaphor has a problem. Every metaphor has a limitation. And we should use these metaphors knowing the limitations. Just because they have limitations, we shouldn't throw them out. If there were a metaphor that had no defects whatsoever, it wouldn't be a metaphor, it'd be the actual thing. So metaphor means a representation. There's no such thing as a perfect representation. So every metaphor has a defect. And this is a defect in this metaphor. The magician does it. Consciousness does nothing. Because consciousness is good for nothing. Now, we can solve that problem very easily by going back to this word mayavi, which in many people will take as a magician, obviously. It's a common word both in Sanskrit and in vernacular North Indian languages. It's common for magician. But any grammarian will get a different meaning for mayavi. So that vit or vin ending is a possessive affix. A possessive affix means mayavi is one who possesses maya, That's the etymological meaning, the root meaning. Mayavi, yes, magician. Why is he a magician? He possesses magic. He possesses the skill of magic. Mayavi. We said before, that which you possess is not you. Right? That which you possess is not you. So if we take that meaning and just doing a little technical thing, by the way, if you're not following this, don't worry, it's a side issue. But this solves the problem in that Atma doesn't do anything, but Atma, figuratively speaking, possesses Maya, specifically possesses ignorance, meaning Atma is joined somehow with ignorance. Atma in the presence of ignorance is able to create waking, dream, and deep sleep. So that's, I'm just solving a technical problem here. Atma doesn't do anything, but Atma is associated with ignorance, being associated with ignorance, the projection of the waking, dream, and deep sleep states take place. Okay, this topic concludes in the next verse. Abaddha chakshu so nasti, abaddha chakshu so nasti, maya maya vino piva, maya maya vino piva, baddha chakshas baddha, baddhakshasyaiva sa maya, baddhakshasyaiva sa maya, maya vyeva tato bhavet, maya vyeva tato. Baddha chakshus is an odd expression. Baddha chakshus literally means having your eyes bound. But this is an ancient way of explaining how magic works. And they thought that something, the magician had some power to play with your eyes. We know that's not how magic works, but and this is from a pre-scientific era. They believed somehow that a magician had this unique power of playing with your power of sight, and by doing so could trick you in such a way. So here he says, abaddha chakshusaha, chakshusaha, for one whose eyes are not bound, abaddha. For one whose eyes are not bound, not affected by magic. Well, that's interesting. Suppose you were sitting there, the magician is doing all this stuff. Suppose you decide to, in modern times, you're looking at your cell phone, checking your messages. So suppose you watch this, these big magicians. I don't know, there's some Penn and Teller, I don't know all of this stuff. Anyway, they have big shows in Las Vegas. I've never been to Las Vegas, so I don't know about all this stuff. So you go to this big show, and they're up there doing all of their amazing things. Well, doesn't affect you at all. You are abaddha chakshus. You are unaffected by the magic. Okay? So one who is not affected by the magic, for such a person, nasti maya. There is no magic. Nothing. There's no elephant. There's no riding. Of course, there were no cell phones in ancient times. But suppose a fellow just fell asleep, sitting in the audience. No elephant, no riding, because the eyes were not affected by the magician. Maya vinaha apiva. Nor does the magic affect the eyes of the magician. So he casts his, they think of it as casting a spell. So he casts his spell to affect everyone else's eyes, but he obviously doesn't want to affect his own eyes. So, so this magic, this magical spell affects other people's eyes and not his. But for someone whose eyes are unaffected because they fell asleep or because they're checking messages, for such people, there really is no elephant. There really is no riding. The, from the magician's standpoint, does the magician, go back to that story, does the magician really see the elephant? There is no elephant. It's magic. And the magician's eyes are not under the spell. The magician doesn't see the elephant. Does consciousness undergo three states of experience? There are no three states of experience, really. The consciousness is the unchanging observer, unaffected by whatever is observed, unchanging. So, abuddha chakshus could also refer to the enlightened person, one who has woken up out of the, I was giving in the metaphor, abuddha chakshus is someone who's fallen asleep or is looking at their cell phone, but in the, oh, that I have a note here that explains it. I'm supposed to tell you, and this is actually important, I'm supposed to tell you that this verse is a little unusual because it gives only the metaphor. It doesn't give what the metaphor represents. Usually you get both. Usually you get the metaphor and what the metaphor represents, not here. So we have to supply what the metaphor represents. So in the metaphor, the magician doesn't see an elephant, and someone who's fallen asleep doesn't see the elephant. That's part of the metaphor. But now to translate that into our experience, somebody who's enlightened is abuddha chakshus. Their eyes of wisdom they have, and their eyes of wisdom are not affected by the so-called magic of Maya. They see reality as it is. Which means, does the enlightened person experience waking, dream, and sleep? How could they live if they didn't experience waking, dream, and sleep? But earlier we said experiences are not necessarily real. The enlightened person knows. The enlightened person has woken up out of the dream of worldly life and sees that whatever is being experienced right now is not absolutely real. Because comes and goes with Buddha Vat, like these bubbles come and go. They're ephemeral, they're transient. So the enlightened person is like the one who is abuddha chakshus, the one whose eyes are not affected by magic. And Maya V here represents consciousness. Does consciousness, if the magician doesn't see the elephant, does consciousness experience three states? Does consciousness experience three real states of experience? Does consciousness truly undergo this travel from waking, dream, and sleep? No. Like the magician is not fooled by his own magic? In the same way, consciousness is not fooled by ignorance. Mind gets fooled by ignorance. Consciousness doesn't get fooled by ignorance. Enough said. And the second half here is the other, finishing the metaphor now. Buddha chakshusa, buddha akshaha. Same meaning. Aksha and chakshus are synonyms. Aksha or chakshus are two words for eyes. So buddha aksha is one whose eyes are bound. Buddha akshasya eva, for the one whose eyes are affected by magic, for that person eva only, sa maya. That magic affects only one whose eyes were affected by the magician's spell. Consciousness is not affected by ignorance. Consciousness is not affected by anything. Then how can consciousness be affected by ignorance? So that's the metaphor here. And last line, mayavi eva tataha bhavet. Tataha, therefore, mayavi eva, only the magician bhavet exists. What is there is only the magician. There's no, as we saw in a prior verse, there's no elephant at all, there's no riding, there's only the magician. And in this metaphor, as I said, it gives only the metaphor. It gives the, to use the Sanskrit terms, this verse gives the drishtanta, but doesn't give the darshtanta. Drishtanta, metaphor. Darshtanta is what is represented by the metaphor. We have to supply that. So just as the magician is not affected by his own magic, how is consciousness affected by ignorance? Not at all. Which means consciousness is not affected by ignorance, so consciousness doesn't need to have that ignorance removed. Meaning, consciousness doesn't need Vedanta. Consciousness doesn't need Tadatmananda or Shankaracharya or any of this stuff. Consciousness has no problem. Correct. But the one who says, I have a problem, consciousness doesn't say, I have no problem. Consciousness doesn't have a mouth, lips, mind. All of this belongs to the individual being. So Shankara here is making a very important point. It may sound a little technical, but think about it for just a moment. And that is, your true nature is already divine, doesn't become divine. So then how to explain all of the suffering of life? And the way Shankara explains it here is by saying that, yes, consciousness never suffers. But the one who says, I suffer, obviously suffers. When you say, I have a headache, who is that I? Remember, we discussed false identification. That I is an individual being, not pure consciousness. The one who is identified with the body and mind, that one is subject to suffering. What Advaita Vedanta does is it puts an end to suffering once and for all. And we'll end with this observation. Suppose you have a headache. You take some Tylenol. Goes away. Then it comes back. Take more Tylenol. Goes away. I mean, there's no reason not to take Tylenol, but there's no way, there's no drug to make sure you never ever have a headache again. They're going to keep coming back. Vedanta solves the problem in a unique way. Tylenol solves it in a limited way. Vedanta solves it in a unique way. It says you can't have a headache if you have no head, you know, the consciousness doesn't have a head. You are pure, formless, unchanging, vast, limitless consciousness. But we have to remove the false identification with the body and mind and come to rest on the truth of who you are as Satchit Ananda Atma. This is how Vedanta solves headaches. Tylenol works in one way. Vedanta works in a very radical way. And just like I've used this bad American joke. The guy says, "Doctor, I have these chronic headaches. I don't know what to do." And the doctor says, "You know, I've examined you, looked at your blood test. This is very serious. We're going to have to amputate." That's a bad, I'm surprised you're laughing at that joke. Anyway, Vedanta's solution is a little bit like that. We'll end with a prayer. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma hamritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om tat sat. All right.